from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On the street, in the car, at home, cell phones are everywhere. And as of this week, your mobile phone number can follow you anywhere, too. Americans today are unplugged, wireless, and more thoroughly connected than ever before. So connected, in fact, that the only place you won't hear a cell phone ring is on an airplane at 30,000 feet. But at touchdown, passengers reach for their cell phones before their luggage. You've seen them. You are very likely one of them. A constantly connected American, always on, always in the loop, or in many loops of interaction. In a few fast, furious years, the cell phone revolution has gone from the excitement of instant communication to a strange new world of blurred boundaries that's changing how Americans live and relate with each other and the world. Now you can hear a cell phone ringing anywhere, everywhere. But do you miss the sweet sound of silence, the sensations of place, of pace, of solitude? Tonight on Point, Always On, with everyone, life in the cell phone nation. Are you living the wireless life? How is it changing your human life, your relationships, your social life? Is wireless America a more truly connected America, or are we missing something in the digital din of mobile telecommunications? Are we even drowning out our own internal dialogue? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin tonight with the latest on the change in FCC rules that kicked in yesterday, allowing cell phone users to take their number with them when they switch wireless providers or any other kind. For more, we go to Chicago, where we're joined by Roger Crockett, Deputy Chicago Bureau Chief for Business Week magazine. Good evening and welcome, Roger Crockett.
Good evening, Tom. Happy to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. Roger, there was some anticipation that there might be millions of people jumping up to move with their phone numbers right away today. As I understand, that hasn't happened in such a huge wave. But what are people expecting to come out of this liberation of individuals' phone numbers?
Well, you're exactly right. Some people wondered whether there would be a storm of activity, and it turns out that it was more like a trickle. And I think that the estimates were as many as 6 million cell phone users would try to switch on the first day, which was yesterday. And as far as I know, the more accurate estimates came in at something like, 100,000. But there was a lot of research and inquiry done by consumers because, what they hope to get out of this is the ability to have the freedom to retain their phone number, one that their family members know, that their work associates know them by, and move that to a different carrier if they've been dissatisfied with the current, a current carrier, whether there's been a lot of dropped calls or customer service is irritating mm-hmm. them. So it's really been, it still, I think, is a win, sort of a huge advantage to consumers because they become empowered to have the freedom to move around more than they might have felt they had before this rule took effect.
And what's the change in the profile of phone ownership and usership that's expected to ultimately shake out from this change, Roger?
Well, we have to wait and see exactly what changes will occur. I mean, if you're talking about the profile of cellular users, that's going to remain mostly the same. I mean, I think that all of the different cellular providers are trying to go after a younger demographic because these are the kinds of users, say 30 and under, that are more aggressively going after new cell phones with new internet technology.
Taking full advantage of the technology. But I thought there was also some expectation that people might be moving away from their anchored landlines and just giving up on that, taking their numbers and going off to full dependence on cell phones.
Well, that's happening more and more. And certainly the wireline providers are worried about that. It's about 3.5% of users right now who have cut the cord. That's going to expect it to rise in the coming years, but it really sort of depends not just on the ability to take your number and go somewhere else, but also on the improved quality of the networks. I mean, what we know now is that when we pick up our landline phone at home or at work, that baby is pretty reliable.
Sure is.
And it's clear.
Mm-hmm.
But cell phone, while they're extremely convenient, we know that they drop calls. We know that they can get staticky. We know that they frustrate us too often right now for too many users to fully cut the cord.
Roger Crockett, you're at Business Week following the industry here. When people in the telecommunications industry look out 5 years, 10 years, 15, do they anticipate a fairly fully wireless world of communications out there, including voice communications, or do they think that that wireline is going to be around forever?
You know, that's a hot debate now, and we're, you know, it's certainly uncertain. We're uncertain about which direction that's going to go, but I can say this for sure. There's going to be a lot more people that fully cut the cord. Wireless is cheaper. It's cheaper for everyone to deploy. Anyone who knows, who has wireless service, who has cellular service, knows that the cost to them can be cheaper, and the technology is improving. So I think as the technology improves year after year, you're going to have a higher percentage of users going to wireless in one form or another. So now when you have, you might have single digits, in the single digits of people, the percentage of people using wireless, that's going to grow. That's going to grow, certainly. I'm not sure that it will get to a point in our lifetime, Storm, where the cord will be completely cut by everybody, but you can bet there's going to be a lot of folks going wireless.
Roger Crockett, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure.
Roger Crockett is Deputy Bureau Chief in Chicago for Business Week magazine. We're talking tonight about the cell phone nation, how mobile phones have changed American life, how that life will change even more. You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined right now from Toronto by Barry Wellman. He's professor of sociology at the University of Toronto, co-author of The Internet in Everyday Life, founder of the International Network of Social Network Analysis. Good evening and welcome, Barry Wellman.
Hi from the Great White North.
Yes, it's good to have you. Also with us tonight from Maribel Dolanoff, joining us from Boston, is Maribel Dolanoff is principal analyst at Forrester Research, a technology and business research company. Good evening and welcome, Maribel Dolanoff.
Good evening.
Barry Wellman, to you first. You're a sociologist. You've been watching how people's behavior, I suppose, and attitudes and interactions change when they move from one mode of communication to another. What do you see? What's the cell phone doing to the quality and the character of American lives, Canadian lives as well?
Tom, the cell phone's part of a really larger trend that started before and is going to continue. And that's the switch from groups to networks and really to individual action. If you think about a wireline phone, it comes into your house and anybody can pick it up. Very few of us have separate phones for every member of the family. Sometimes teenagers get their own phone. Cell phones are immensely personal. By contrast, very few people share them. So all of a sudden, it's the individual in communication instead of the family. And that's part of a basic switch we have. We know that, for example, people only eat together family meals about 3 times a week. So it's not the dissolution of the family, but it's the loosening and the networking of the family that's going on.
And the cell phone itself as an instrument of making members of the family more individually, I don't know, isolated or on their own, what's the impact of that?
No, actually, it makes them more together. Even before the cell phone, men and women were living multiple schedules. High proportion of both men and women work. Teenagers are running around. And this is one way that people can find each other. I know a lot of families who give cell phones to kids just so they can call them up and say, where are you? I know of one family that I'm close to. When the daughter said, I'm over in somebody's house, and it turned out she wasn't, and a quick cell phone call was able to pin that one down.
I am amazed at how many aspects of life end up getting touched by this, and you're right. I mean, cell phones interact with wireless internet and the Blackberries and all the rest of it. But just walking down streets in an American city today, the number of people who are no longer really engaged with the public space they're walking through or the people around them, but have a cell phone sort of glued to their ear, part of another conversation that dropping in from another place. The sense of place itself, Barry Wellman, seems somehow diminished by everybody talking to someone who's not there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a particular problem in North America, and I include Canada in this. In Europe, in Northern Europe, and in Japan, people are much better cell phone trained. They murmur. They are able to keep their eyes about them. But it's not that people are being antisocial, but their whole social focus is on the private conversation and with little awareness of context. And, of course, that may be the way the United States is operating in general these days. So,
Maribel Dolanoff, you track cell phone use around the world. The United States is by no means the leader in adapting to cell phones. Where does that stand? Where's the cutting edge? How different does life look there?
Yes, actually, that's true. There is quite a bit of mobile deployment as you look around the globe. And actually, very regional things happen. So, for example, if you go to the Nordic countries, you get to a point where we have a very high cell phone penetration. Close to every man, woman, and child is actually carrying one of these devices. And you find that the services are breaking up into multiple services or communications-based, such as voice and text messaging. Text messaging is very popular outside of the North American market, and it's just starting to come in here. Although some of the more advanced services that are happening are in the Asian market, and a lot of those are what I would call entertainment-oriented and location-based oriented. So, for example, in Japan, people actually play games on the train as they do their hour-and-a-half commute to and from Tokyo. And if you are in South Korea, you can actually get TV streamed down to your phone. In addition to that, we see things like video mail. If you're in some place like Australia, you can actually buy a Coke or make a payment at a parking meter with your mobile phone. So these phones are increasingly becoming both a method of communications, transaction, entertainment. And we actually see that the device market going forward is going to shift to be very, shall we say, application-focused. If you're entertainment, it might be a gaming console, but all of those will actually also have voice connectivity attached to them. So we're seeing that we're going to have more communication in more types of applications.
Talking and doing a million other things all at the same time. Maribel, the technology is always moving forward, and it's always eye-catching, but we really want to focus in on the kind of sociological impact of this. I don't know if you pay attention to that, but do you see ways in which in countries that have even more thoroughly adopted the cell phone, the wireless model, social interactions, relationships are changing under the influence of that technology?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, we're more highly connected. Nobody has to search around for a payphone if they want to actually talk to somebody. You can actually utilize your time better and keep in constant communication with your family, your friends. Long distance on mobile phones has actually opened up a whole new opportunity to communicate more with people. But in addition to that, we're seeing some local phenomenon outside of the U.S. market in Europe where it's actually changing the way people date, the way people meet their friends. You can have friend finders on your phone. You can actually send out a message saying, hey, I'm at this bar. Anybody with this type of profile also at that bar that wants to talk to me? So clearly, these are actually being used as vehicles to enhance social interaction and help people connect in an easier fashion.
Very well, and I wonder if this technology is erasing some very fundamental concepts. For example, being alone. I mean, are people really ever alone if they've got 16 conversations or 1,600 at their fingertips and are very likely engaged in one, even if they're walking down a country lane?
Well, they can always shut the phone off. I mean, we still have that freedom to do it. But you're right, it's always on, and there's an expectation that you're always available. I went away unexpectedly for about 8 hours, about a month ago. And when I got back, I found 10 messages saying, where are you? Are you okay? We're worried that we can't reach you. But what we have is a growth of individual autonomy. You can connect with who you want to connect with. Remember, we always compare what's happening now to the mythical village, desert island, or rural village of prehistoric times. And there you were always on and always visible, too, but there was a lot more social control. Now we switch among multiple networks. We can cruise and we can maneuver. We don't have to take calls. We can attend to one message and not another message. Mary Beth pointed out that some of the extensions that you can do with cell phones, but we just did two studies, one in Japan, and I did that with Kakuko Miyata.
Very well, and hold that thought. We've got to take a short break here. We want to come back and hear what you found. We're talking tonight about the cell phone nation, how mobile phones are changing American life, American society, American relationships. My guest, Barry Wellman at the University of Toronto, and Maribel Dolanoff, analyst at Forrester Research. You can join us as well. What are the dimensions of your cell phone universe? Has the cell changed the way you live, socialize, relate to the world? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the cell phone nations. This week, you can take your personal phone number with you wherever you go, right off that wired line to a wireless line. We're looking at how mobile phones are changing American life, American society, American relationships. Are you a constant caller, the pedestrian, the driver who never takes the phone from your ear? Are you addicted? Is the cell phone blurring boundaries in your life? And is that a good thing or a bad thing? And how have mobile communications changed the way you communicate, live, relate to friends and family? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jesse's calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Jesse. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Just great, thanks.
Yes, I'm a truck driver, and it has been a great tool for me. I came from the computer industry into driving trucks, and it helps me out because if I get lost or something like that, I can always dial up the person that I'm delivering my load to.
So no more CB radio, but what about your relationships, Jesse, with friends and family? Do you feel like you're more or less always with them because you can more or less always speak to them?
Yes, I mean, I have a set of triplets, and it helps me out a lot to actually talk to them. They're 4 years old. So it's a good thing to be able to talk to them and listen to them and hear how their voices change and how they're growing up and how they actually communicate with me.
Is it less lonely on the road as a trucker with the cell phone on your hip?
Yes, it is. I mean, it is, and to me, I hate the road. This wasn't one of my choices, but with the economy the way it is and no one wants to hire an older person,
we hear
you. You don't have any choice but to take what you can, and
right.
That's what put me out here, and it has been a blessing to me.
How many?
Where I can actually do this.
Jesse, when you're on the road, how much time do you roughly reckon you spend in a day talking with friends or family on the cell phone?
Sometimes it can be anywhere from 2 to 4 hours a day. Because of the plan that I have, I'm able to, it's unlimited. You know, it's over 5,000 minutes a month, and we have two phones that we actually communicate. And when we communicate with the two phones, it doesn't cost us anything.
Well, that's
so
incredible.
It's pretty cheap.
Maybe 4 hours a day. And when you do that, you're talking with your triplets back in the kitchen at home or your wife.
Right.
Do you feel like you're, if not there, half there or, you know, in their lives?
Yeah, I'm still in their lives because the thing about it is that, you know, they say, you know, I ask them a question. I say, do you know who this is? And they say, yes, it's Daddy. So it's a good thing to have it to where you can actually let them hear your voice.
Jesse, thanks so much for calling. Thanks so much for calling in. Barry Wellman, there's an example. Jesse is a truck-driving man, but he's fully plugged into his family, maybe 4 hours a day, without that sense of distance, of being quite so separated from them.
Yep, that's fascinating. Jesse actually bears out a couple of things we've been finding out. One, people mostly use their cell phones to keep in touch with their loved ones or their boss, or sometimes just to make arrangements to meet people. But it's not expanding their networks as much as say, the Internet has done. It's very much a close-tie medium, socially close, even if physically distant, as Jesse is. The other thing that's happening is that we often think of the cell phone as dragging people away from the corner cafe, but it's not. It's an add-on. You're sitting lonely in your truck. It's not that you can be in the pub or the cafe sipping coffee with your friends. It's either being in the truck, not talking to somebody, or to talk to somebody. I think we have taxi drivers that are a lot saner now, at least the ones I take, because they can talk to their friends and relatives while they're cruising around the city all day. Robert De Niro would be out of a job again.
Maribel, I wonder about this. I mean, just the idea that we now have very easily accessible conversations with people all over the country or the world that are kind of ongoing. They never end. You can resume it at any moment. Just, you know, pull the phone off your belt or out of your pocket, and boom, you're talking again with Sam or Jane or Mom or Dad or the wife. It's as though the conversations never have a full stop.
You know what's interesting about that? One of the great things about this technology is that it's exactly what Barry said. These are conversations that wouldn't have happened. So these are actually using some of what would have been your downtime, but also some of what just would have been lost time to you as an individual. So it's really enhancing your life. So it's not as though you're in a constant chatter all day long, but you have the option to use the phone in a more efficient manner for you to make your life better.
Barry, is that really lost time, or do human beings need that relative seclusion of unconnected time to know what the heck is really on their own mind?
Well, human beings have always grown up in tribes and in families. I just don't
think that we're sitting there being bombarded by stimuli all the time. What we are is trading going locally for going by cell phone, and in many ways we're adding it on. One of the things we found, I saw it most nicely when I was in Barcelona 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
People would sit down at a cafe. First thing a group would do is pull out their cell phones. They would pull their long-distance community in with them to the folks who were chatting at the cafe. So suddenly it was being expanded. But are people going crazy from too much stimuli? I've seen the claims of internet addiction, and now we may have a new cell phone addiction, and they seem very dubious to me. They look like therapists looking for business rather than real problems.
Looks like a positive add-on to you. Listeners, what do you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Mick is calling from Boston. Hi, Mick. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks very much. I'm less concerned about conversations that wouldn't happen and more concerned about conversations that shouldn't happen.
Such as?
Well, it seems to me that people are more prepared to say into their cell phones in crowded social situations things they'd never actually share face-to-face. I'm so fed up with sitting in restaurants. The cell phone goes, and the next minute we're all hearing about the guy's bowel movements or divorce case. There's some psychology at work here that means that people talk about things into their cell phone loudly in public that they'd never share without the cell phone there. I just wonder if anybody knows what's going on.
Now, isn't that the truth? The kind of revelations that they would never say straight to you, but at the same time, they're very well aware that you're within the sound of their voice when very intimate details of a life are discussed on a cell phone. Barry Wellman, how do you interpret that?
Yeah, it bothers me, too. I sometimes join the conversation. If they're going to broadcast to me, you know, I'll start commenting on their love life, which really upsets them. I think partially it's because we're behind Europe and Japan in our ease of use in this stuff, because in those countries, people basically murmur to each other. They don't broadcast. But, you know, America, to some extent Canada, is a country of individualists, and they're less concerned about who's bothering them, and this gives people another chance to express themselves. It is annoying. I ride public transportation every day, and I'm sitting there in the streetcar, and I get to hear things I didn't hear. On the other hand, I often hear people talking to each other just as loudly. I've heard it in British restaurants. I've heard it in Toronto streetcars and New York subways. I think one difference is that when we overhear a cell phone, we're only hearing half of the conversation, whereas when we hear people talking loudly to each other in a pub, we're hearing both sides, and we can give a kind of completion to the whole thing.
Mick, do you find it more offensive to be forcibly engaged in half of a conversation that's taking place on a cell phone than, for example, in overhearing a conversation at the next table between two or three people?
Yeah, I think you're onto it there. I actually think there's something going on in the listener as well as in the speaker, and it is easier to block out conversations than it is the cell phone half that you're hearing. I think it's just because there's something about that ring in a setting where, you know, you really don't want to hear the ring. So,
But there it is, no matter where you are. Good luck with your dining out, Mick, and thanks for your call. Shane's calling from Westerly, Massachusetts. Hi, Shane, you're on the air.
Yes. I've had a cell phone since I was 13 years old.
You're a modern man, Shane.
I am. And, you know, it's caused me so many more problems than I would have had without it.
Now, what do you mean exactly?
Well, because my bills are like $200, $300 a month. I'm working my butt off trying to pay them off and pay my car off.
Why don't you get a better plan, Shane? Everybody pays, I don't know, $30, $40. Why is your bill so high?
That is my plan, is $35. But with all these added features on these phones that make your bill higher, like the AIM and all that other crap that's on the cell phones, they make you, it's almost like an addiction. Like, I started using the AOL on my phone maybe once or twice a day, and then I started using it like 20, 30 times a day. My last phone bill was easily 200, 300 pages long. So, they get you into trouble almost.
Shane, you've got to get a grip on this, friend. What do you use the phone for most of the time? Talking to friends or something else?
Talking to friends, stuff like that. Family, because it's mostly my phone, like my home phone, pretty much.
wherever you are. But a $300 bill, that's a big one. Shane, get a grip on that. Maribel Dolanoff, what about differences in usage between age tiers? Do you see a vastly different kind of use among teenagers than among, I don't know, middle-aged or older Americans?
Actually, Shane's experience isn't all that different than some of what we've seen in the younger teen set. They happen to gravitate towards more of the messaging-oriented services in addition to the phone services. And that age grouping was a high telephone user to begin with, if we all remember when we were 16 and we used to talk mm-hmm. for hours on the phone. Mm-hmm. So now
that was Greece. Remember these songs in Greece?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. So the problem now is really to get the person into the appropriate plan, and we're now starting to see some more flat rates around things such as messaging.
But do you see, Barry, let me put it to you, do you see this younger generation integrating that kind of I'll talk with anyone, anytime, anywhere sensibility more into their lifestyle? Or once anyone grabs the cell phone, does that become part of the way they see the world, communicate with the world?
Yeah, they are. There's much more cell phone use among teens and among young adults. They're just used to it. Just like we pick up an ordinary phone, it's just normal when people pick up a cell phone. At my age, I'm an old man of 61, we go, wow, I'm using a cell phone, but it quickly becomes normal. The question is, what's going to happen 10 years from now? Are these folks going to kind of grow up and shift towards using PCs and regular phones, or is it going to be cell phone based? The telephone guys I talk to expect much, much more mobility. They expect people to want information wherever they go. They expect people to want pictures wherever they go. But remember that this cell phone convergence with the wired phone in one line really only works for singles. It'll work for Carrie and Samantha and Miranda and Charlotte, but it won't work for Dick and Jane and Mom and Dad because they have a phone coming into their house. It really works for people living alone.
But you were describing earlier families where every family member has their own phone. Is that communal, you know, family communications right. well of the single phone still important?
Well, let's work out the scenario. Sure, they have their own cell phones, but if I commandeered the landline, the wired line coming in, and said, okay, that's hooked up to my phone, my wife wouldn't have any way to communicate using the wired line. So it's really a tension between the individual and the group that they're living with or working with.
Cell Phone Nation, how's it affecting your life? We're at 1-800-423-8255. John's calling from Boston. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to touch on a point that you guys made a little bit earlier about the conversation with no stop. And a phenomenon I've noticed is the sort of dropped or abandoned conversation. If you're talking to someone and you get some bad air and the call is dropped, I find that often I don't call people back just because I don't. It's not like it used to be with landlines where you always finished your telephone conversation
with a kind of formal conclusion and bidding them adieu.
Exactly, and this is unique to cell phones.
Now, why do you think that is, John? Is it because they know and you know that, well, he's gone into a tunnel or he's dropped and he'll call me back whenever we need to talk again? It's casual as that?
Yeah, I think conversations over the wire or over the air are a little more disposable now than they used to be.
Now, that's interesting, meaning that, the time is almost free.
Yeah.
In that case, why is the conversation going on? Is it more about feeling, you know, hearing the breath of the other person, just having that link, or is it really about the substance of what's being communicated?
Well, I'm talking to my sister, and we talk for hours. So, you know, we can talk for, you know, forever on and on and on, and it's like, okay, we lost our connection. That's the end of the conversation. But
all done and done with it. Changing
yeah.
etiquette there. John, thanks for your call. Maribel, what do you think? A real changed etiquette in cell phone land?
I think it's actually even more insidious than that. Nobody ever looks at you and says, oh, I'm losing the call on the landline. But if you don't want to continue your conversation on a mobile phone, you say, oh, you're breaking up. I can't hear you, and drop the call.
Well, is that insidious or is that efficient dispensation of a call that's not working out?
It's a little bit of both, actually.
Well, I wonder. Robin is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Robin. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think I used to run a working mother support group at a high-tech company, and I really think that when history looks back on the era of the cell phone, It's going to be rated right up there as one of the modern conveniences with indoor plumbing and refrigeration that really changed the life of the family.
How do you use it? How do you see families using it?
When I talk to the working mothers and I encourage them all to have cell phones, I liken my life without a cell phone to the last few minutes of Ron Howard's movie Apollo 13, when the capsule is re-entering the Earth's atmosphere,
right.
And there's a minute of where it's going to be out of communication. And, you know, Ron Howard shot that minute in real time, so you sit there and you watch that minute click off. And even though it's a true story, and you know that this capsule's going to land and everything's going to be fine,
right.
It is the most stressful minute in the movie.
Are you saying that at this point, if you're for 1 minute away from your cell phone, you start to perspire and fear you're going to burn up?
I'll tell you, the irony of this whole thing is that when I was running the Working Mothers Support Group and I was encouraging mothers to have cell phones, to be in constant communication, I did not have a cell phone for the rest of my family. And when parents would ask me, should I get a cell phone for my teenager, I would say, oh, no, you know, that's frivolous, that's unnecessary. And then we took a family vacation for Columbus Day weekend this year, mm-hmm. and our family went in different directions, and my husband had a diabetic reaction. And my daughter and my husband were alone. Thank God we were in the middle of New York City where everyone has a cell phone.
Right.
And somebody was able to reach me. But I'll tell you, we came back from that vacation, and Tuesday morning I was on the phone with Verizon getting 3 more cell phones so that my husband and my children could each have cell phones.
So, Robin, on balance, do you see it as just a net gain for everybody to be connected to everyone else all the time?
You know, I'm not a Luddite, I work in high tech, but I will tell you, I am amazed at the reduction of stress,
mm-hmm.
number one, that the
mm-hmm.
cell phone has allowed me to have in my life. The conveniences, I mean, we were on the Mass Pike. My husband has a cell phone that has connection to the internet,
mm-hmm.
and on the Mass Pike, I was able to go onto his cell phone, go onto my bank, log on to my bank, and transfer money into my son's account, who's out in California, who needed money. And he was able to just go to an ATM with his card, all while we're in a moving car going 65 miles an hour.
Carolyn, this is Barry Wellman. And I would be a little concerned about the privacy of that. It's very tough to get good privacy on cell phones. Be careful when you move money around.
Okay.
So watch out for moving the money, although I'm sure on that particular day your son was happy about that. Robin, it sounds like it's fairly well completely integrated and welcome in your life, period.
It's ubiquitous now, but it never ceases to amaze me. Every time I pick up the cell phone to tell somebody, I'm stuck in traffic, start dinner, I can't pick you up, you know, are you okay? Where are you? I am always amazed and astounded at that level of stress that's reduced in my life.
Hey, presto, it works for you. Robin, thanks very much for your call. Barry Wellman, it sounds as though we've got a lot of people who just want to be able to speak to anyone, anytime, and that's net positive.
It sure is. We're probably more connected than we've ever been before, because we have all the old traditional means. We now think a telephone is traditional, even though it's 100 years old. And we're adding on the internet to that. We've added on cell phones. We've added on Blackberries to that. And the trade-off of that is people are dispersed. You know, with Robin's son lived across the country in California.
Dispersed, but at the same time connected. We've got to take a short break. We're talking about the cell phone nation, how mobile phones are changing American life, American society, American relationships. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the cell phone nation and how mobile phones are changing American life. My guest tonight, Barry Wellman, joining us from Toronto. He's professor of sociology at the University of Toronto, co-author of The Internet in Everyday Life, and from Boston, Maribel Dolanoff, principal analyst at Forrester Research. You can join this conversation as well. Do you embrace the always-on life or resist it? How is constant communication changing American society? What is everybody talking about all the time? And are we freed or imprisoned by the cell phone? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Barry, Maribel, I wanted to just read something to you here. This is from Paul Goldberger, the New York architecture writer, who's not so crazy about what cell phones do to our sense of reality within a given place. He says, the great offense of the cell phone in public is not the intrusion of its ring. It is the fact that even when the phone does not ring at all and is being used quietly and discreetly, it renders a public place less public. It turns the boulevardier into a sequestered individual, and suddenly the meaning of the street as a public place has been hugely diminished. Now, calling across the street and calling from New York to California or Europe are precisely the same thing. They cost the same because to the phone they are the same. Every place is exactly the same as every other place. They are all just nodes on a network, and so increasingly are we. Barry Wellman, here's a lover of architecture and place and physicality saying it's weaving a kind of spell of somewhere else around us all, even when we're sharing a physical space together.
Yep, he's right. The one fallacy is we all don't live in New York. I mean, I was born and raised in New York, and I love there. But most people don't walk around boulevards. At best, they're sipping a cold latte at Starbucks.
But that's still a place. It's still a space.
Yeah,
you're still surrounded
sure,
by the guy with BO and the guy with the great accent and the guy with the great hat and all the rest.
Uh-huh. It's pulling us away from the mall into a private space where people are close with. And this didn't start with the cell phone. The cell phone is picking it up because it's a long-term trend. We've moved away from trains and buses and walking to cars where we're really insulated, where we don't know much about anything in between our start point and our finish point. Instead of going over to the neighbors, we've been picking up phones for a long time, and the cell phone extends that. Although one of the things that really surprised us, Keith Hampton and I did a study, and we found that most internet and really most phone calls were very, very local. It was actually bolstering the neighborhood and kind of helping people arrange get-togethers.
Tying it together, though not necessarily on time, we read. You probably saw this just a week ago or so, the study that came out saying that cell phone users tend to be tardy more of the time, that tend to miss appointments because they have the freedom to call in and say they'll be late, so they are late.
That's interesting. Yeah.
There's another one. Heidi's calling from Bayfield, Wisconsin. Hi, Heidi. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I can appreciate cell phones, but I don't have one. I don't feel that I need one. One of your guests mentioned that people can choose to turn their phones off, but I don't know that they do. And what concerns me is that it seems like as Americans, we live in fear of what we might miss all the time if we're not connected all the time. And personally, I enjoy my privacy. And when I'm at home, I can be reached by my land phone. And mm-hmm. if not, then people can leave a message after the beep.
So there's a kind of, I don't know, clear field around you that you like, not being bridged by a cell.
Exactly. I've been on, I've gone on walks with my relatives where we're out in nature and it's beautiful, and they can't leave their cell phone in the car. They have to have it with them. Even though we're going out to get away from all that, they bring it with them.
And they are plugged into everybody else all the time. Heidi, thanks for your call. Maribel Dolanoff, I wonder what you find, looking in other countries about that. Do people still carry the same sense that I'm walking and I have the freedom, even the right, to be in solitude? Or is there a kind of sense of obligation to flip that phone on and have it on for the unseen conversation that's always floating around?
Well, I think a friend of mine in Europe explained it best when they said they could even get cell phone connectivity on the ski slopes. So I think that globally, people are very connected. They are very always on. I think that's just a transition in culture at large. I think that we will move into, once we are through the original impact of the technology, the ability to look at it and say when and how I want to be communicated with. I also want to make a comment on the architectural discussion we were having earlier.
Yeah.
I think that people are now using this as the right to choose whether or not they want to be present or whether or not they want to share that boulevard that they're on. So if you look at a camera phone, many people when they're traveling, if they're going down Manhattan, they can snap a photo of themselves, send it to mom, wherever mom may be, and share that experience. Or they can just as well decide that I don't really want to be staring at people when I'm walking down the street, and it's easier for me to basically move into my cell phone conversation, use that as a barrier for some of the communication that I don't want to have.
And what do you think about that? I mean, the notion that although we may all be in Times Square, we're not all in Times Square. Do you welcome that, or is it weird?
I think they are all in Times Square. It's just how they choose to interact with Times Square.
Well, but are you really there if your conversation is with someone in Barcelona, if your emotions are tied up with somebody in Hawaii, if you're, you don't have you're not engaged with the people around you. You're engaged with that chip of steel at your ear.
I think it's really important that people have that choice to decide whether or not they want to be present someplace or whether or not they want to have that present that person present with them via the cell phone conversation.
Well, this is great. It's kind of like a beam me up, Scotty, without the beaming up. I mean, you're describing people being present or not being present, and that as a new almost right. It's fascinating. Rupert's calling from East Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Rupert. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I love your show.
Oh, thanks.
I'm afraid I'll be the fly on the soup.
Okay, go for it.
I hate the damn thing.
Why?
Oh, my employees at work come in with their cell phones. Instead of helping the customers, they are hiding in the back talking on the cell phones. And I can't get them to work.
So do you have them check their do you have them check their cell phones at the door like pistols in the Old West, Rupert?
I'm sorry.
Do you have them checking their cell phones at the door like pistols at the in the Old West?
I'm afraid this is going to be the next step. Definitely.
But they're already being checked at gyms so that people don't snap photos of you in the locker room.
Right, so you don't lose your privacy on the bike or in the gym. But it's interesting. I mean, here, Rupert, you're saying when your employees are at work, you don't want them inhabiting several realities at once. You don't want them slipping off into the orbit of mom or girlfriend or boyfriend.
No, I want them to work. And I have people coming in filling out applications with their cell phones on, and while they're filling out the applications, their cell phone is ringing off the hook.
That may be an indicator that that's not the one you want to hire.
Absolutely. I also don't like the fact that some customers have their cell phones on, and they come into the store, and we're talking to them. It has eliminated a lot of that. We are talking and having a nice conversation with the customer, and the cell phone rings, and that's the end of my conversation.
And off they are to Denver or California, who knows where. Rupert, thanks for the call. Barry Wellman, what about that? That kind of who has priority in a time when you can be speaking essentially with anyone at any time? Do you see a kind of extra weight given to physical presence or not?
Generally, I do. But as we talked about before, the people who have your cell phone number tend to be people you're close to. So the relationship dominates the presence. If it's your wife or child or your lover and they're calling up, suddenly you may lose focus. And as you pointed out yourself, Tom, this is part of this great shift we have from being immersed in a group.
Mm-hmm.
Rupert wants his people to be focused exactly on their work, and I don't blame him, to people multitasking and doing a whole bunch of things at once, which is great sometimes, but as Rupert pointed out, is really a bummer on the job.
Do you think it leads to a less contemplative society? I literally look around the streets sometimes and see, it seems to me, I don't know, 6 out of 10 people chatting with somebody as they're walking along, not looking at the angle of the sunlight on the tree across the street, not thinking about the next thing they're going to do, even the next step they're taking. Is there something lost in that loss of interior contemplation?
There may be. I'm not sure about that, frankly. I'll just have to stop there.
Not sure. We have stepped into a new place. Maribel, what about yourself? Do you find that you want to fill the blank spaces now with a chat?
Oh, I find I already do. I'd much rather sit and have a chat at an airport than to watch the CNN terminal or watch the people go by, because I'm at the airport so often. It makes my life more productive and happier.
Well, there we are. We may be in a time when our sense of ourselves and how we're going to relate to other people is just fundamentally changing. You've got that option at all the time to be part of a bigger conversation and ongoing conversation. Maribel Dolanoff, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Maribel Dolanoff is Principal Analyst at Forrester Research in Boston. And Barry Wellman in Toronto, thanks very much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Barry Wellman, Professor of Sociology at the University of Toronto, founder of the International Network of Social Network Analysis. In a moment, a 20-something bachelor watches all his friends get married. This is On Point. Twenty-six-year-old Pennsylvania resident Bill Toland has never been married, and he hasn't had much interest in getting married anytime soon. But now that all of his friends are getting married, he's starting to realize that the single life may not be all it's cracked up to be. In this radio diary, Bill Toland laments the rash of weddings that have forced him to confront adulthood.
Being a newspaper reporter is in terms of hours worked per week, my second job. Mainly I go to weddings. I'm at that age, the big 26. In the last 3 years, I've attended, rough estimate here, 842 weddings. That's a lot of time spent in churches and hotel ballrooms and fire halls and Lazarus Macy's, Lord and Taylor's, Kaufman's, searching for throw pillows to match the $100 bed sheets I just bought. The spate of weddings caught me by surprise. I figured that my friends would marry eventually, but not until maybe 2038. Work the whole bachelor thing out of their systems, you know? Bachelorhood has innumerable perks. Living on my own in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, my main non-reporter responsibilities are napping, snacking, and remembering to shave at least twice a week. There's no need to put the toilet seat down, no sharing of the remote control, no 6 a.m. trips to the convenience store for a gallon of milk so the kids can have their cereal before school. Why, there's scarcely a need for milk at all, except for donut dunking purposes, and I rather like it that way. So imagine my alarm when nearly all of my college friends started to get married. Aside from the personal financial burden this poses, a portable camp stove for Sean and Casey, a fancy wine rack for Nipa and Rishi, there are other social concerns. The principal one involves our waning Wednesday wing night tradition. Used to be that my friends could be counted upon to visit the local pub once a week for beer and deep-fried unidentifiable chicken parts. But now? Sorry, we're picking out dinnerware patterns. I'm working late tonight, gotta pay off the honeymoon debt. No thanks, the wife already cooked lasagna for me. And worst, we're just gonna stay home this evening. I have to wake up early. Wake up early? These are the apologies of bona fide old people. Barely 4 years have passed since my college graduation, and now my classmates are worried about getting up early? Whatever happened to 3 a.m. euchre games? Francis Bacon said that a fellow who takes a wife and children has given hostages to fortune, for spouses and progeny are impediments to great enterprises, either of virtue or mischief. Certainly, he surmised, the greatest works have proceeded from unmarried or childless men. Amen, Francis. Witness Ludwig von Beethoven. He wrote 9 complete symphonies, and he wouldn't compose nearly as many if he'd married and had a child or two. Have you ever tried to write a full symphony? Well, it's difficult business, and having to drop the kids off at soccer practice 3 nights a week doesn't speed the process along. It's a surreal thing to watch the marriage of my friends, Davin and Jen, Sean and Casey, Rishi and Nipa, Stu and Rachel, Mike and Tara, Tim and Jesse, Aaron and Allison, Eric and Chrissy, Mike and Stephanie, more to come. Madness. Who are these people? The same ones who not long ago accompanied me on a madcap romp through Niagara Falls involving casinos, body piercings, and lots of rum? Of course, there's something to be said for marriage and the courage required to take on such an obligation. And I confess I have a certain envy for friends who figured out the course of their lives while I'm still trying to figure out whether to order dinner from Domino's or Papa John's. The most ordinary cause of single life is liberty and the passion to preserve it, Bacon said. And yet lately, I can't shake the idea that I'm missing out on some of life's sincere pleasures by not having a warm plate of lasagna waiting for me every once in a while. Maybe it's time to finally start growing up. Who the heck is Francis Bacon anyway?
Bill Tolan is a reporter with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He lives in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Julie Jopp, Chris O'Connor, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Sarah Cook. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.